Hey, everybody. It's Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. I am The One, in case you forgot. I am always happy to interview someone who has written a book that I've actually read and enjoyed. John Tamney has a new book out. It's called... It's called The End of Work. The thing is, I was looking at his old book, but it's called The End of Work. See, I read his other book, which I really, really loved, called Popular Economics. And these are like business books for people who don't have a business mind, i.e. a moron like myself. John Tamney, he's the director of the Center for Economic Freedom at FreedomWorks. He writes for the Wall Street Journal, Investor's Business Daily, Financial Times, National Review. But he put out a book called Popular Economics, which I read, I guess, maybe a year and a half ago, which really helps explain economics in ways, with metaphors and analogies that make it easy to understand. And if this book was a textbook in grade school or high school, we'd have a lot smarter people walking around. Boy, that was a great sentence structure. Then I got his new book, which is called The End of Work. And what's interesting about his books is he has what I call the hot spot. The hot spot, I talked about this with Thomas Sowell. That's when you can like open up any page and there's like one kind of key area that that makes your brain sizzle. It's like a fact or some kind of interesting information that you didn't know before. Like a brief example of what a hot spot is that like I'll never forget now if I can just find it. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. As I'm looking for, you know, like what I learned from your book, that the biggest importer of French wine is
Costco.
Yes. That's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yes, the most powerful buyer of wine in the world is the sommelier at Costco. Isn't that brilliant?
That is so a sommelier could actually have a hell of a life and a career at Costco.
Yes, that's where you'd want to be, and it just shows you how prosperous Americans are that as Costco scours the world for great wines, Americans are even enjoying that in size fashion.
It's insane. And it, but by the way, in that same page, you have all these interesting facts about prosperity and the effects of prosperity in all everywhere from the arts to academia. But yeah, there's this one fact that just made me so depressed that in 1 year, maybe it was a year to 18 months, Kyle Jenner made $420 million in sales. What was it? Was it like a perfume?
Yeah, she just through Instagram, you know, No major marketing team. She influences buying and has these different products.
$420 million, yeah. John.
Isn't that amazing? The way in which people can make money today is just stunning.
This is somebody who... I don't even know who this person is, but she's almost a billionaire.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's why the millennials, they're going to be the richest generation yet. They understand this technology. They grew up with it.
Well, you know,
and so they know how to bring buyers and sellers together. They know how to get customers in ways that we don't.
I hate them. They're so good. You know, we jumped ahead because I wanted to show you why the book was so appealing, or the listeners. Your book is called The End of Work, and it's a very optimistic idea. And what you're basically, from what I could tell, is the end of work, meaning you don't work anymore. You just find a work. You find a kind of work that matches your talents, and this is going to end up happening to everyone. Is that kind of the, you know?
Yes, that's where we're headed. Think about you. I get the feeling that you love your work uncontrollably.
In a way. Sometimes I don't. But, yeah, you're close. Oh, basically, you know what my work is? I explained this the other day. Work for me is every day is homeroom.
Explain. I get that.
Yeah, you know, when you sit in homeroom and all you do is you crack jokes with your buddies in the back, and that's what the five is. It's basically I come in for an hour and I'm expected to kind of provide levity and some kind of thoughtfulness. But it's basically I'm just sitting in homeroom. So I'm getting paid.
And you're so good at it.
I'm being paid to be a class clown.
And people love watching you.
Oh,
and
thank
it's
you.
Got it's it, it, it think about that. You get to be in homeroom every day for a job and you're paid well for it. You're working you are very good. You can work hard at it precisely because to you it's homeroom. For other people, getting on TV would be horrifying. Mm-hmm. So you get to do what you love, what elevates you. And my argument in the book is that with a growing, evolving economy, more and more people will get to be Greg Gutfeld. More mm-hmm. and more people will get to be Tiger Woods. More and more people will get to be Wolfgang Puck because they will be going to work, and work is where they will showcase their unique skills and, let me stress, intelligence in front of everyone. Work is where they'll celebrate their skills. That wasn't true 150 years ago. It wasn't true 50 years ago.
So true.
But it's increasingly true today.
Yeah, like I think about my dad was an accountant because – I guess that's just what, and you know what, but it's so weird that my dad would be an accountant and that I'm so opposite that, but maybe he had little choice in the matter. Maybe he really didn't want to be an accountant. I don't know. You know?
Well, I think without question, my dad always wanted to be a basketball coach,
mm-hmm.
but he had a wife and kids by the early 1970s and it just wasn't an option.
Right.
Well, fast forward to the present, and in the state of Georgia alone, just the state of Georgia, so imagine what it's like in California, there are 36 high school football coaches mm-hmm. who earn in the six figures. That's just in Georgia.
Right.
Now, go back to the 1970s when my dad wanted to be a basketball coach. Bill Belichick got into assistant coaching in the NFL back then. It was a $25 a week job then. And so you had to have a different job. And so my dad's dream of being a basketball coach didn't exist. Jerry Seinfeld's father loved comedy.
Right.
But it wasn't realistic for him to become one. Well, you know, nowadays – Emerson University in Boston has a comedy major.
Right.
Jerry Seinfeld was able to get into comedy because it was a reasonable career pursuit at his age, not for his father. And see, look, go back in the past, all these talented people, all these funny people, all these people with unique skills that were suffocated by an economy that just wasn't very evolved.
Yeah, you know what's funny is a great example of what you're talking about, especially with the Seinfeld thing, the effects of affluence is in this – you can see it in the proliferation of new TV shows and networks. And you talk about this in your book that, like, there's so many places now for actors and actresses and comedians to go. 30 years ago, 40 years ago, you had three networks. If you got onto The Tonight Show, you were – that was the biggest thing on the planet if you got to, you know, sit next to Johnny. But there was, like – that's five people a week. Now you've got Netflix. You've got Amazon. You've got – all of the cables, it's there's so many options, and that's because of prosperity, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's because of mass affluence. More and more people get to do what they love. And let's be clear, and showcase their comedic skills, showcase their athletic skills. And let's be clear, it's going to get better and better because I predict in the book, and it's so easy, blindingly simple to predict, we are headed for a four-day work week.
Mm.
And we are because automation and robots aren't going to put us out of work. They're just going to make us all geniuses at work, make us exponentially more productive.
Right.
And so what that means is that demand for entertainment is set to skyrocket. The next, you know, we went from agrarian to manufacturing to service. The next economy is the entertainment economy. More and more people will be in homeroom on a daily basis, and we're seeing it right now. So lucrative is video gaming.
Yeah.
People literally watching people playing video games.
Amazing.
So advanced is that, you know, video gamers who grew up loving it, they're earning in the millions of dollars a year, but there's now a new profession. It's called video game coach. Mm. I mean, if when you and I were kids and we said, oh, I'm going to become a video game coach, they would have had us committed.
Yeah.
But now it's a reasonable career option, all because of the mass affluence you describe.
Yeah.
Because we're rich, we demand entertainment. We demand restaurants. We demand all these things that we couldn't in the past.
You know, to remind me about the restaurant point because I want to bring that up, but the thing that you're talking about with video games – is also the same case with other gaming in the sense that you should, in your book, you say that you should be able to major in a sport like football, like an actual, like the way people would major in electrical engineering or majoring in English literature or gender studies. You should be able to major in a sport because the industry is so expansive. Billions and billions of dollars. I sound like Carl Sagan. And it's only to get bigger. That the fact is, I may be a terrible football, I'm a tiny football player, but I could make six or seven figures in the industry.
Of course. Why do we, when someone's good enough to rate a scholarship to an Alabama or a USC, something that costs hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, why do we tell them to de-emphasize it once they're at school?
Mm-hmm.
And so, when you're that good, oh, you should focus on English. Oh,
yeah.
Really? Well, why? Because so people will say, well, you won't make the NFL. The statistics are very low, but sure. But nowadays, you can make a life out of your love of football.
Exactly.
Assistants earn in the millions. On the collegiate level, Boise State has an annual budget just for assistants of $2 million a year. In the SEC, the average assistant salary is over $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
I already gave the Georgia example. There are 36 high school coaches in Georgia who earn in the six figures. In the city of Houston alone, there's at least 14.
Mm-hmm.
If you love football, which is an incredibly cerebral sport, you can make a life out of it, a career out of it. But also add, what's more valuable to an employer? That you played for Nick Saban
mm-hmm.
and got an interception against Auburn, does that interest an employer more, or that you got an A in English or business class?
Yeah,
I think we know the answer.
I know the answer. I'm not sure I like the answer because I wonder how many jobs I lost when I was applying when I was in my 20s because of that very reason. Like some guy walks in and the first thing that the manager says, hey, did you play ball? Because a guy will come walking in, he looks like a refrigerator, and they'll go, yeah, I was a linebacker at Berkeley. Boom. And I noticed this when at Cal, when I was there, people get jobs precisely because of an athletic background, because guys like to be around jocks. I think that's one of the reasons why that happens. But I like this other part that you talk about education in general. And I agree with you. I don't know if you said it was snake oil, a lot of education, but there's a point that you made. Maybe I said that. You didn't say that.
But I agree.
We're leading colleges and universities are leading students into majors that they don't need, that they end up in total debt for, and it all becomes this weird kind of virtue signaling where you have to keep getting a better degree to out-degree somebody else, and it's total snake oil because you don't need it, right?
No, of course you don't need it.
Yeah,
college is all about signaling. It's nothing more than that, especially because we're an evolving economy, rapidly evolving. What could professors teach us that have any relevance to the real world?
Mm-hmm.
If they knew the future of work, they wouldn't be professors. They'd be earning millions and billions in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go for different reasons, but to evidence supporting the claim that we don't need college education is look at China and South Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the most uneducated populations on Earth, yet they're two of the fastest-growing populations. What we see is that economic freedom is what powers prosperity, not education. The U.S. has the best colleges in the world because it's a rich country.
Right.
It's not a rich country because it has the best colleges in the world. Let's be serious. Rockefeller had no education. Thomas Edison had a junior high education. Look at our billionaires today.
Yeah.
You think any of them learned what they learned in college?
No.
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
And you know what's interesting that you're talking about your career, which is interesting, a little bit like mine. I would say that I had no direction to ending up at Fox and having a couple of TV shows, but it was like a pinball. So I felt like I was a pinball in which I was going forward, bouncing from places to places. And I had 15 years in magazines. I'd edited three magazines, Men's Health, Maxim, and stuff. And you would think, okay, this is going to be great for you. But that didn't take me where that didn't get me to Fox. What got me to Fox, and this is up to a point in your book, I got the job at Fox News, not because of magazines or my publishing, but because I was blogging at the Huffington Post while I was at Maxim in England. And people at Fox were reading my stuff on the Huffington Post, and that's how I got to know Breitbart, and Breitbart introduced me to Fox, and I got the Red Eye job. So it's how you get your job now is not in a typical fashion. It's like it could be writing for free on a shipping magnate's blog.
Oh, it's so true. The different ways in which we can showcase ourselves are endless.
Yeah.
And when we limit ourselves to the basic ways and we say we have to get a job because of where we are educated or you have to have a certain education to get a job, why would we limit someone because you haven't gone to Stanford?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, nothing wrong with having gone there, but what did you learn there that has any relevance to a world that's so rapidly evolving? And it's important. I mean, I wrote this book for parents as much as I did for young people.
Yeah.
I want parents to stop worrying if their kids don't like school.
Right.
What should worry them is if their kids have no passions, because we thankfully live in a time and place that if you have a passion, almost guaranteed you can turn it into a remunerative career.
Yeah.
That's what's important, because hard work, doing what you love, and that's the only way to work hard, is what's going to get you forward. That's much more important than education.
What's your you mentioned Tamney's Law. Can you recite it?
I can't recite it exactly, but close to exactly. Tamney's Law merely says that as prosperity grows, more and more people escape laziness because they're able to do jobs that don't feel like work.
Right.
So this runs counter to the common view of economists that, with prosperity we get lazy. No. Mass affluence, as we've discussed, leads to the explosion of jobs that don't feel like work. And when you're doing something that you love that doesn't feel like work, your productivity skyrockets. And so I'm of the view the more we free the more it grows, the more people will just race to go to work every day because that's where they get to be superstars.
It's interesting.
You get to do that now, but it's going to be more and more people. I get to do it now to a smaller degree, but it's going to grow and grow and grow.
The point that you're making, and it's the flip side of your point, I think is really important, which you're saying that more leisure time won't contribute to laziness, because laziness is the product of unhappiness. Like, you are lazy because you don't want to do the things that are considered your options. Like, the options are not attractive to you, so you can't get up and get off the couch because, damn, it just doesn't interest you. And what you're saying is, like, that laziness is kind of a construct based on just a lack of a job that makes you feel good. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Oh, you nail it perfectly. That's exactly what my book is about. Mm-hmm. My argument is that no one is lazy. No one lacks work ethic.
Yeah.
What they lack is a way in which to showcase their unique skills and intelligence. 150 years ago, I'm sorry, I would have been lazy. I would have been an object of pity because my only option to survive was to work on a farm.
Yeah.
Well, can you imagine all the immense talent that suffocated? Mm-hmm. And so with growth, with the constant, yes, destruction of jobs of old, more and more people will show up at work just dying to get to it because that's where they get to be great. Mm-hmm. No one's happy doing nothing. Warren Buffett could write you and me a check and we could be set for life, but he could not make us happy. Happiness comes from hard work, but you can only work hard if you love what you do. I'm describing a future that I think is getting closer and closer, where more people will work immensely hard precisely because the job will reflect their unique skills.
Mm-hmm. I've got to run, but there are two things I wanted to touch on. You talk a lot about how taxes hurt innovation, and it's basically by reducing money for investment in risk, because when the government takes your money, they won't risk it. They don't want to risk it. But it takes the person with the disposable income who actually is willing to take the risk for a stop.
Yeah, it's called the venture buyer. The first laser printer cost $17,000. The first computer cost over $1 million. The first mobile phone brick size cost $4,000. You need the super rich who can lose money on stupid purchases to figure out for us, to be the guinea pig, to figure out for us what we need in the future. Then entrepreneurs come in and mass produces, and it makes us exponentially more productive, which again leads to the kind of jobs that we all want to have. We need these venture buyers, and so government spending and taxes blind the markets to the future and slow us down from getting to this future where more and more people aren't working simply because they're doing what they love for work.
Yeah, you know what the thing is? What you're talking about, it shows how shallow and superficial criticisms of the wealthy can be. Like, you know, rich people are bad. And in your book, you actually say you can never be too rich because it's the rich people that are throwing the money at crazy ideas and solving problems and buying the $17,000 printer because they can. And then over time, that printer becomes $1,700 and then $200.
Absolutely. Without them, the progress would ground to a halt. And I make one of the chapter names in the book is, if you don't hate Sundays, you hate a lack of capital. The rich don't spend it all, and so precisely because they don't, they've got the money to go to the creation of all sorts of new and innovative companies that we want to work for. You take away the rich, you take away all the cool jobs that we want to do. They create them.
Yeah. Well, I got to go, but I wanted to ask you, and this wasn't in your book, but it's driving me nuts, these new – what do you make of – do you know a lot about restaurants and what they're doing to the – they're now going to like create kind of a minimum wage for everybody there so you can't even get tips? Have you been seeing this kind of trend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's happening in D.C. right now, or they're trying to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think it's really going to hurt the restaurant business, but I was just wondering if you had any insight into it, because I've been I spend all my money in restaurants because I don't cook. My wife and I, we just eat out all the time. So it's like this is my concern that my restaurants are going to suffer.
It's going to hurt their bottom line. And yeah. It's important because that's an important aspect of the book too. Mm. In the 1980s, when Danny Meyer got into restaurants, people looked at him like he had one eyebrow. It's like, hey, what happened? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, getting into restaurants is just another alternative between being a doctor or a lawyer. And so people who grew up loving food, that was their passion, but had no interest in traditional schooling, used to be looked down on. Now they are rock star twos. They show up at work charismatic. Mm-hmm. And it speaks – restaurants are a huge part of my story, that people who just love food and wine, mm-hmm. and literally designing coffee drinks for patrons,
yeah.
now get to make a career of it. And this is beautiful. In the past, they didn't have these options.
That's so true. All right, the book, The End of Work, Why Your Passion Can Become Your Job. John Tamney, excellent, excellent book. Always a pleasure to read your stuff. It's always so clear and packed with facts. Thanks a lot, John. And
thanks for having me, Greg. Appreciate it.
And best of luck with the book.
Yes, thank you.
Take care. Bye.